sinker, and a line. I said, fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Well, good day, boys and girls, and moms and dads, and children of all ages, and everybody kind of in between. For those men, women, others, and undecided, yeah, you're welcome to. Okay. Snack factor. Snack factor's a big deal when it comes to fishing. And I'm sitting here looking at Robert's notes. It said big tarpon eating glass minnows. And then he's got ladyfish. But glass minnows. Now, here's a fish that averages 130 pounds. Would you say, Robert?
Yeah. Absolutely.
130-pound fish.
Which is about as big as a person.
It's
the
as
average
big
person.
As you are.
Yeah, as big as I am, for sure.
You know, that's the same size as you.
Yeah, that's not the average American.
No, the average American's like 280 pounds. But, you know. I'm sitting at 182 right now, I think. And I got to tell you, I try and tell people, when you're out fishing, that the old adage, big fish, you know, big bait, big fish, is absolutely true. But let's finish the sentence. Big bait, big fish, no small fish. You're not going to catch little fish with a great big bait.
Right.
Not going to happen. But here's tarpon, 130 pounds, 180 pounds, 200 pound tarpon going through eating these little tiny fish that are anywhere from 1.5 to 4 inches long, and as a full adult might weigh an ounce, maybe. They're skinny little, they call them glass minnows because you can almost see through them. Mm-hmm. They're transparent. Little skinny, little nothing fish. But this big fish is out there eating them. So if we go big bait, big fish, we can go small bait, any fish. You take an 08 size Rapala or a Yozuri 3D Fingerling. These are small 2.5 to 3 inch lures, right? About the size of the average glass minnow.
I think they're about double the size.
Well, they're twice as thick.
Yeah.
But lengthwise.
Lengthwise, yeah.
Okay, they're 2, 3, 4 times, 6 times as thick, but lengthwise, it's about the length of a good point. I was misspoken on that. But your average length of this bait is like a little glass minnow. Mm-hmm. A very small white bait, you know, one that's probably 3 months, 4 months old.
Right.
So when you're looking at all these fish, and now on that little bait, you can catch, let's say, a 10-inch, 8-inch mangrove snapper.
Right.
You can catch a 130-pound tarpon. Yeah. You have such a broad variety of fish that will hit that little lure. For small fish, it's a full-size meal, even bigger than what they can handle in some cases, but it's still attackable, where they figure they can get a piece of it. For big fish, it's like you picking up a Hershey's Kiss. We were down in Pine Island. They got a chocolate shop there. It's actually really good. And we never stopped there before. We stopped in. They had fudge and these, you know, truffles and rum balls and stuff like that. Actually, really tasty stuff. But you take a little truffle, and I'm 182 pounds. This thing's about an ounce. Why would I bother eating it? It's not a meal. It's not going to really sustain life, right? Because it's easy and it tastes good.
Right.
Same reason a great big fish will eat a little tiny glass minnow. It was easy and it tastes good.
Right, and it's also like the way I would eat M&Ms. I certainly don't eat them one at a time. I take a handful, stuff it in my mouth, and then work it down. And I think that's what's happening with tarpon, is that they're running through these schools of glass minnows and with their mouth wide open and filling up, and then they're picking up the stragglers on the side.
I got to tell you, I think that's true, but like in my case, I tend to eat them more one at a time.
Okay.
Which is, I was thinking about it, because with M&Ms, I did eat M&Ms like one at a time, but if I eat chocolate chips, it's by half a handful.
Yes, exactly right.
I don't know why that is, but M&Ms, I'm fine. You put one in my mouth and chew it, and another one. But if I'm doing chocolate chips, no, it's half a handful. Weird. But that sums everything up. But the point of this is, if you're out there fishing and you've got a great big lure on, you're going to, it's kind of goes back to musky fishing. They put a giant lure on, you got a big spinner and all the black fur on it and everything, and you're pitching it up to the shoreline, reeling it back, pitching it up, reeling it back. And you've got hundreds of casts to get a hit. Whereas if you downsize that to a small, medium-sized MAPS, you might have caught 300 fish for all those hundreds of casts. Now, they might have been small, but they were fish. But you'd get small ones, medium, maybe even a big one would hit. So you got to ask yourself, which is the more important thing? Now, this question is for people who go trolling or throwing lures. Do you want to wait and get those that one big giant fish, or do you want to have more activity? You want to catch more fish or wait for a giant fish? Which are you, RJ?
Oh, I want to catch fish. I've been on many a charter where you're going after some fairly big fish and you're trolling for hours and nothing happens. And you're like, geez, I even wonder why I'm here. And then you get that one big fish, right? And you're all excited. And then 5 minutes later, you're bored to death because you're just trolling and nothing's happening. I mean, I go fishing because I want to catch fish. I'm not out fishing because I want to get the world record. I want to catch fish.
Now, Robert, agree, disagree?
Depends on the company. if the company's...
The yeah. people you're with?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to make find out, well, if I'm with Penn or if I'm with Shimano or,
no,
you know.
No. It's the people that you're with on the boat, because there's sometimes where it's... In the nonstop action prevents you from having as many nice, quiet, cool conversations or sharing of stories versus those long waits in between bites allows you to relive some of your cool moments or share stories and stuff like that.
Yeah, I do that on the way out and then on the way in.
Yeah.
The rest of the time is fishing time.
Yeah. Nah, I'm probably a little bit more partial to the wait for the bigger fish thing.
Well, because I know you love tarpon, shark, you know. Mm-hmm. You'd rather wait for hours and get the one fish you're looking for.
Yeah.
Than a bunch of other fish. That's why I was kind of, you know, talking to the two of you. I kind of had an idea you'd be on opposite ends of that.
Right, and neither of us are right. There's not a right or wrong to these answers.
Don't tell
right?
me that, because when I go on the internet, if you don't agree, you have to hate each other.
That's right, and I hate you, Robert.
So these are the rules of today's society. If you don't agree, if you think you should wear this or not wear that, you must hate each other. Or if you say, I want to wait for a big fish or a little fish, you must hate each other. That's the rules. I'm sorry. That's the way it goes. But basically, I'm more of in between, because some of my most memorable fishing trips were we fell asleep in the sun. We caught one big fish, you know, we had a great time doing whatever, and other great fishing trips where we caught, you know, fish every other cast, and, you know, it depends on the day, people, who you're with, who you're not with. We got so involved with fishing one time, me and a buddy of mine were catching fish, having such a great time. We're bringing them in one after the other, and they're beautiful fish, and it was snook, and then redfish, and then this, and then that. And all of a sudden, the boat was aground. we were in fishing in shallows near some potholes, and we're getting bait and putting it on and doing this and doing that and catching fish and having a good time. Next thing you know, I walked across the boat to go get something, and the boat didn't rock. The tide had been going down.
We literally
end up sitting on a sandbar. The boat was immovable. Luckily, the fish were still out there. They were in the potholes. But the boat's high and dry. We had to wait hours before the tide came up. We get so involved in the fishing, we just flat let all the water go away. No idea it was there. I mean,
that's funny.
But that happens when you're out there, you know.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that's different between casting lures and choosing the size of lure for most fish or big fish is when you go trolling, you can actually do both.
Right.
Now, what I tend to do is put bigger lures down deeper to get more attention from fish, possibly get a nice grouper to hook up or a giant redfish, something that's going to live close to the bottom, sees that big bait going across, makes it more enticing. So my largest lures are actually the deepest diving lures I have. 30-foot diver, 40-foot diver. But as I come up and get further away from the boat, the lures get downsized, downsized, downsized. So my smallest lures are the furthest ones away from the boat and the highest up in the water column. Now, one of the reasons this is a more practical way of doing it, a lure with a giant lip on it grabs the water and starts heading down. There ain't anything you're going to do to stop that. I mean, it's got a great big lip on it. Boom, down it goes. So it can be closer to the boat and deeper. But when you have a little tiny lure, sometimes you've got to let out a lot of line to get that lip to stick in the water, especially if you're using, you know, leaders where you're putting knots in front of the bill, because the knot can take up a lot of the bill space so it doesn't grab the water as well. So with a giant lip lure, I can get that to go down and do what I want it to do right away. But with a little tiny bait, I might have to put out 100, 150 feet of line just to get it to stick in the water. And the faster you go, the more you're pulling the lures up because your rods are upright in the boat, rod holders on the boat. So you got 2-3 feet off the water from just to where you're putting the rod, and another 6 to 7 feet up in the air. So that's actually giving lift to the lures as you're pulling them. So those little lures require a tremendous amount of line laying in the water. So even though it's just practical that way, your deepest lures closest to the boat, down real far, your biggest lures, and your smallest lures furthest away from the boat and on the surface or as close to the surface.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, it physically can't work any other way. They have to work that way.
Right.
But sometimes when you hear it out loud, all of a sudden that little light bulb goes off and you're going, oh yeah, well, if I put that little lure way out there, keeps it away from the other lures, and it actually works.
Right. If you look at the physics of it, picture a box with a rope tied to it, and you want to exert force on that box. You want to pick it up off the ground. So you stand about a foot away from it with your rope, and you can probably pick it up. Now let out about 20 feet of rope and try to pick that box back up again. Ain't going to happen. So the further away you are and the greater the angle going out to an object, the less force you can put on it. So that's what's happening to the little lures because they're way out. You got this almost parallel angle to the surface. You're exerting the least amount of force on them that
you're getting
you
the water to grab the line and hold the line in the water.
Mm-hmm.
The more surface area line you have dragging through the water, the heavier it is, the more it's going to allow that little lure to dip down in the water. The less line that's in the water, the more the lure is bobbing around like a cork.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's all about the physics of it. And this is actually not a, this is what you should do. It's the only thing you can do. It's kind of an absolute.
Right.
Because you can't put a little lure right next to the boat and expect it to stay in the water, and your big lure way the heck out there. It doesn't make any sense. Photo period. What's up with that remark here?
Sunset and sunrise. You know, it's changing quite a bit in the last just, what, 2 days?
I have less time to take pictures?
10 days, 14 days? No. No, it's all about the sunrise and the sunset. You know, our days are getting shorter. You know, if you notice it, sunrise now is about 7 o'clock where it starts to crest the horizon line. And at night, it's, what, 7:40 now, roughly, where you start to lose colors pretty good. And the fish realize that. You know, it may be 100 degrees outside. There may be rain showers all around us still going on where it's still summertime in that appearance. But a subtle change that's obvious to see if you're paying attention is that photo period of the daytime, which can really let you know some of the changes that are going on with some of these species, like right now with the tarpon feeding on the glass minnows. Some of the species out along the beach are starting to disappear, like the snook. The snook are starting to thin out along the beaches and moving into the intercoastal and even up into the harbor a little bit more.
And so less daylight is going to let them know that it's going to get cooler quick.
Yes, it's time to start feeding real heavy, get ready for the winter time, start heading to your quote-unquote wintertime spots where they're going to stay.
With tarpon, they're going to hang around until the water actually chills off, and then they're going to go. Because we've had tarpon in the harbor all the way through December because we never got a cold front.
Right, exactly.
And the tarpon just hang out as long as there's food there and the water temperature's right. Because I think tarpon realize that warm water's less than a day swim away.
Right.
So they feel that chill. They go, okay, time to head down to the Keys.
Yeah.
And they'll just bop down to the Keys, and if the Keys get cold, they'll just go down past Cuba.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it works, you know. But your smaller fish have to start moving a little bit ahead of time. Yeah. You know, they have to start changing up their food source, their feeding times, all that stuff. It's just kind of neat.
I felt bad for the people on the Weather Channel because, you know, we get these storms, and you get one that comes up and it's a massive disaster. You know, your heart just bleeds for Louisiana. I mean, you're not human if you don't feel sadness for what's going on and, you know, around where that hurricane hit. But then you get the next one comes up and they're like, this could be really bad. This is going to develop and we've got a guy on the beach. What's it like on the beach? It's raining lightly and the people are surfing, but don't worry, it will get catastrophic. It's coming. And then it just kind of goes on by. And boy, you know, watching these people get, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
And I wonder why so many people get hurt from these storms. They listen to those newscasters and then they finally get sick and tired of listening to them and don't do anything about it. Then they get wrecked.
Yep.
That, I think that's the truest statement.
It's crying wolf. It's just stupid.
You know, because you get burnt out on, oh, my God, the world's ending, the world's ending, the world's ending. We've been hearing this basically since Al Gore started it, what, in the 80s? That the world was end. We're already supposed to be covered in ice or burnt up. And I still hold true to my belief that when they can tell me 12 days out where a hurricane's going to land, I'll believe they can see 12 years into the future. So far, they can't get 12 days. So don't tell me what's going to happen in 12 years. And the one thing about the pandemic showed how quickly everything changes.
Yeah.
In Venice, Italy, it was like a month where there was no boats running up and down the canals.
Yeah, and the dolphins came back and a bunch of other
water got clear.
Water cleared up, yeah.
I mean, some of that was propaganda with the extents of the animals that came around. But, I mean, look at, they had video footage, like just, I mean, even in San Francisco alone, they had coyotes and mountain lions and bears literally going right down the street there in Chinatown area. Middle of the day.
Yeah. But why not? They're not afraid of these people.
Not
and
at all.
That's what city folks don't get. This is not a Disney movie. This is a bear and a coyote. He will eat you.
Yep.
He is if he's well fed, he's okay. He don't really care what you do. Leave him alone, he'll leave you alone. But when he gets so hungry, he's looking at you, and you're nothing but a corn dog on a stick. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Life is too strange. But trout is legal here now.
Yes.
So you can actually keep trout, what, 3 a day now, I think? 6 per boat, 3 per person?
Correct.
So if you got one guy in a boat, you're allowed 3 trout, I think. 2 guys in a boat, you're allowed 6 trout. 3 guys in a boat, you're allowed 6 trout.
Right. And now, only one of those total can be over 19.
Yeah, only one on the boat can be over 19 inches, which is, to me, the dumbest, most stupid thing I've ever heard, because trout die in 5 to 7 years. Figure out what the average big trout is, put the slot limit 2 inches lower than that, and then they breed all the way up until they get to their old age, and you take them when they're going to die.
Right.
Nah, let's let them die of old age. Okay. Makes take sense. The young, healthiest ones out of there.
Yeah.
Makes much more sense.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah, okay.
The last several days have had some good trout reports, though, surprisingly, with how warm it really is. There's been guys getting into some 19 to 22 inch fish, like, because those bigger fish are always in singles and doubles. You're not usually getting into schools of those. But just drifting the flats down there around Jug Creek Shoals all the way down to Yuseppa, fish in those 3 to 5 feet of water range, have been picking up some fair numbers of trout, and had a couple reports even down in the Indian fields. Down there in Matt
Lachey.
Indian
Fields, yeah.
Down in Matt Lachey, a couple guys doing good down there. One guy, the Cape Coral guys that always come to the Luigi's Talks.
Right.
They were in, I don't know, Friday or Saturday. And they got into several that they caught on topwaters while they were down there looking for the schools of redfish. And they were throwing little poppers and little Zara puppies the Zip and Ziggies, because he was in there.
Yeah, the Zip and Ziggies, and the other one that I would look strong at is the Storm Chug Bug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said he was throwing a popper, or chug bug, but...
The whole thing about the difference with the Chug Bug is the tone of the pop. Mm-hmm. It's really much better suited to saltwater fish and the noise that attracts saltwater fish, whereas like... I can catch fish in a hula popper or the poppers and all that, and they're good, but it's a different tone on the pop, and they sit different. The chug bug is actually lays flat on the water, and it gives more of a popping cork tone.
I never thought about that, but yeah.
It's got a little different sound. It's got a very small popper mouth on it compared to the poppar and some of these other ones. And I just have a lot better luck in saltwater if I'm trying to use a popper. I don't do well with poppers. The chug bug is probably the only one in saltwater that I actually do well with. I do fine with poppers in freshwater, but I've had a hard time getting that over into saltwater. But when I changed to the chug bug, my odds went way up. I'm better with the drop tail prop baits and stuff like that. Right. I'm very good with those, the walk the dog stuff. But the poppers... I really had to go to the chug bug before I could get a popper to work in salt water effectively, consistently.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm glad it did, because I didn't know what I was saying. But
don't look at me.
Yeah. What bait were they using? Were they using shrimp, pinfish, any ideas? Or were this all lures?
They're just throwing all lures. Because there's such a hodgepodge of fresh water down there, and it's so blooming hot. He said his shrimp keep dying too quick, so he didn't want to mess with it. So they're just having more fun practicing their artificial techniques.
Well, we've got a big shipment coming in from Mr. Twister. We're going back to the basics with a lot of American-made products. We've got, in the next 2 to 3 months, we will have a more American-made lures tackle than we've ever had in our existence. Mostly because of the government regulations and shutdowns, and pretty much governments worldwide want to... The only thing I can think of is they just want to reset how the world does business, how the world order is, whatever. But because of that, we got very creative, and we're just ordering, lots of little tiny companies that produce their stuff here in the U.S. And no, it's not going to cost anymore. You can buy good products for the same as the imports, you know, a little bit less, a little bit more, but pretty much the same thing. Now, you know, can't say it's going to be, you know, $6.99 for that and $6.99 for this. One could be a little bit higher, a little bit lower, but really neat products. But going into a lot of this stuff, the Mr. Twister double twin tail, double tail, curl tails,
right?
That is a trout whacking son of a gun. You put a jig head on it, you got two curl tails on the back of it. Kind of, when you think of it, reminds you of a DOA bait buster, because that's the basis of that lure, twin curl tails.
Right.
So, yeah, you did think about that, but you went, wait a minute. No, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely, that's pretty unique.
Yeah, so we've got a ton of the twin tails on the way. We ordered a bunch of that stuff. Getting back to American-made products, wanting to go with all that. But some of it's really cool. And these curl tail grubs and the twin tail grubs were the basis of trout fishing, ladyfish, jacks for decades before some of the newer stuff kind of took over. But getting back to the roots of it, the tandem lures, the ones that chase each other, two lures on one leader. So when you jig your rod tip up, one lure pops up, the other one follows it up, then they both go towards the bottom, and one lure's chasing the other. All these curl tail baits, and if you don't know how to do that, I'd be happy to show you at the store. And you can build them on a twin tail, single tail, but we're going to go back to a lot of the basics and get away from the fad and fashion of fishing and get back to this worked for 50 years. But now you have to have this? I'm calling horse hockey. I really am.
And I think the other thing in diversifying the product lines, we're going to find stuff that works because there's a lot of fishing pressure in this area. A lot of people out there fishing. The fish have seen a lot of Yozuris. You know, if you throw something different, maybe you're going to have better luck. And if you throw something that acts differently than what the main lures that are being tossed at these fish, I think that's going to make a difference also.
We have one company that's making spoons here in the U.S., and they're going to make two colors exclusively for Fish and Franks. And that one does exist with another manufacturer, but I can't even find them right now. But these will be two colors exclusive to our store that are phenomenal for the area. We don't have them in yet, so I'm not telling anybody, because believe it or not, there's a lot of industrial espionage. But when we get them in, we'll be talking all about it. Photo period, days getting shorter. Now, are the fish going to feed heavier as the days shorten up during the day? Or would that just hold true on new moons, dark nights?
I think it's going to be on those darker nights when they're going to feed a little bit heavier, but they're changing their feeding pattern a little bit more.
So it's not so much that they're feeding harder or whatever, but more or less, okay, as the day gets shorter, you've got different weather coming up, so it's more about where they're going to go and how they're prepping for that shorter days, cooler time, so they're going to eat more. Build up fat.
Well, and the type of food that they're going to eat. Like, this is the time of year when, you know, how throughout the summertime you got white bait where it gets big, and then it gets small, then big again. Well, this is the time of year when those pinfish that were the size of your thumbnail back in July are now the size of a silver dollar to about three fingers. And they have more substance to them. You know, they're denser skin, denser meat, denser bones.
And denser bones is actually a big thing. People forget, because when they eat a fish, they're just eating the white meat off of it.
Right.
But when a fish eats a fish, he's eating the whole thing. That's the bones, the skulls, the brains, the entrails, It all goes in one meal.
Scales, all of it.
And the bones and scales can be a highly nutritious part of the meal because it's a lot of calcium, a lot of other things that allows them to grow bigger.
Mm-hmm. It allows them to build up, start to build up that body fat, because we always talk about like white baits, oily fish, soft body fish, high energy basically helps them develop their eggs for their spawning. But now they need something that will help build up that fat to survive through the months where it could potentially get colder, because a fish can't predict how cold the winter is going to be. So they've got to just be prepared for it just in case.
Now, RJ, you might know this. There's two farmer's almanacs out there. Is one real and the other imitation, or are they both kind of the same with different formulas?
That boils down to a legal question that I know of. You had the original Farmer's Almanac that came out of, and I forget the name of the press, began with an R. They published it for years and years, decades and decades. And, I can't think of the name. But anyway, they stopped publishing it for a short period of time, and somebody else came up with, well, we really want to keep this going. So they're pretty similar. And then the original publisher got sold to somebody else, and they came back with the original Farmer's Almanac. So they're both out there. They're both pretty much the same information.
Now, they're
just different, just two different publishers.
But they're basically using the same math formulas as the Mayans did.
Yes, exactly right.
When you look at the Mayan calendar.
Rodale Press, that's what I was training. It was Rodale Press was the original publisher of the Farmer's Almanac.
But now, they use a math formula the same way the Mayans did when you hear the Mayan calendar and it's predicting this and that and the next thing. This is a formula for this, right?
Yeah, and they also have all the historical data going back to, you know, the 1600s, I think. And what they're looking at are what are the trends. And so they're looking at these big macro trends that could be 10 years in the making as opposed to what did it do last year and what do we think it's going to do this year. So they're looking at these 10, 15, 20, 30-year trends for things. And that's one of the reasons why I think that they've been so accurate in what they predict. In addition to the formula, they lay that formula over the top of it.
Well, the problem with today's stuff is it's all computer modeling, and there's not a very long database for computers.
Right.
Computers don't have 200 years or 300 years of data to draw on. They only have the last few years people have been inputting data into them. So they don't have the historical trend a Farmer's Almanac would have.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, there's the solar lunar table thing. That's a computer formula.
Same as the tides.
Yeah, and those are fairly short in their data compared to, like, the Farmer's Almanac. So, you know, we're looking at global trends that are going back decades and decades, and that's why the Farmer's Almanac is pretty reasonable in its predictions.
Yeah, and you never want to hold it to this is what's going to happen, but you can at least get a general idea of what may occur during that time.
Well, if they say
with a reasonable certainty.
Well, and you look at the macro stuff that they're talking about. When they say it's going to be a colder winter, you could pretty much guarantee it's going to be a colder winter.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's just weird. We just got another Farmer's Almanac because we utilize those to, when you're in the fishing business, everything in your life revolves around the weather.
Yes.
You know, I literally despise what's going on the Weather Channel right now, but I put it on, I watch a pre-recorded show, and that way I can go back with the remote and go back through it and then stop whenever they might say something that's going to be relevant or important. And I just wish they would get back to the whole country maps. Say, okay, here we got a front. It's coming through and it's going to affect this area and this area. It's become the 3-second. I mean, if you've got ADD, the Weather Channel is your station.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's 2-second clip, 3-second clip. You might get 5 or 10 seconds, but that's always somebody standing there talking. You know, when they're actually showing the data coming up, you don't really know because this section of the country, that section, the other section, the next section, next section. I want to see the whole thing. Say, this is where it's at. It's going to come across here and be here in 3 days. All right? But we live and die by the weather, and that's why we've always because I have to order now. I'm going to be ordering $100,000 worth of product from a company either today or tomorrow. Now, I've already spent way more than that in the last 2 or 3 weeks ordering other products. But if it's going to be a nice, reasonable winter, I've got to have $200,000-$400,000 worth of products on the way so that as the business comes in, I'm going to be able to have stuff to supply the people. If it's going to be a miserable, rainy, dreary winter, well, I got to cut those orders way back or I'll go bankrupt. So, believe it or not, the Farmer's Almanac is one of the tools I've always used to try and predict how much money to spend.
Well, here's a curious thing, and I'm going to take a look at it after the show. Is the Farmer's Almanac predicting global warming? Are we looking at trends with the Farmer's Almanac that say things are getting warmer or the temperatures are getting more extreme? I don't know the answer to that, boys and girls, and I'm going to go check it out.
I am truly believe in global warming because
as a cycle of what the Earth does, right?
Well, as I've said 1,000 times, I don't mean to bore you with this. We had an ice age, and then it got really warm. It caused the Grand Canyon, it caused the Mississippi, the Missouri, all the rivers and our lakes were from the ice age, and the glaciers dug stuff out and melted and caused these other things. And without the warming, we'd still all be covered in ice. I would never be born because there would be 1.5 miles of ice on Illinois, the state I was born in. But the Vikings went through and left their shores, conquered England, Iceland, Greenland, Canada, the U.S., France. They went everywhere. The Vikings were everywhere. Unstoppable. What stopped them? The mini ice age, which I believe ended somewhere in the mid-1800s. Because it's back from the Viking times. That's the mini ice age shut down the Vikings and destroyed their growing seasons because what allowed them to go was so much global warming that Greenland, Canada, Iceland, all of them had growing seasons long enough to actually grow crops and sustain communities. And then when the mini ice age hit, all that ended. The growing season got too short. They starved out. The people just couldn't make it. So that ended the rule of the Vikings. Otherwise, we'd all be speaking Dutch or Swedish or whatever it was the Vikings spoke. But we wouldn't be doing English because they would still rule England. But the Ice Age did that. But didn't it end in like the mid-1800s?
No, I think it's a lot earlier than that.
No, I really don't think so.
Well, we're going to check that out right after the show, and we'll let you know next week.
Early mid-1800s was the actual end of the mini Ice Age. And it's been warming up quite a bit since then. And kind of like it did after the last ice age. But, so I do believe in global warming. How much of this CO2, greenhouse gases, you know, I hear in one statement that cows are producing, and they just got around to wild pigs. They said wild pigs produce twice as much greenhouse gases as all the cars in the world. And I'm thinking to myself, really? Now, is this why the dinosaurs were all dying off? They weren't little wild pigs or cows running around.
They were some damn big wild pigs, yeah.
Really, really big. Millions upon millions of these animals, and most of them herbivores, running around eating. And can you imagine how much a dinosaur that's 150 feet long, 50 foot tall.
Are we going to imagine a dinosaur fart now?
I mean, can you imagine being around that thing?
Not me.
Don't go in there means the state. You know? So there's a lot of crazy stuff. I am not denying it's getting warmer. What I don't know is, are we contributing? Yes. Is it the crazy lunacy? No. But we see things go back and forth. Forget all that. The difference is what are our fish going to do about it? And they're just like the people who come down. I want to be a snowbird here next year. I want to go up, spend the summer like up on the Great Lakes, and then I'm going to come back in Florida in the winter. And so I'm looking forward to being a snowbird. Our fish are basically the same way. They want a summer out by the Gulf of Mexico, along the beaches, Gasparilla Sound, Pine Island Sound, and then they're going to winter through the upper harbor, where you have a little browner water, more solar collectors, the canals. They can winter in these spots, and it's much more comfortable. So summertime, out by the Gulf, wintertime, back up into the canals and the upper harbor. If you live in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, you don't have to travel usually from late October, early November, all the way through to the beginning of May. You never have to go any further south than Pirate Harbor or Cape Hayes.
Right.
You can go all over the upper end of the harbor and catch fish all winter. But at this
sometimes
time of year...
just to the end of your canal.
Yeah, I mean, your canal is probably better than anywhere. Can't tell you how many charters. You get on a boat, you think you're going into the back bay in the middle of nowhere, and you end up in a canal.
Yeah.
You know? But when all this is said and done, people don't realize how much the fish move in and out with the weather. You know, you used to seeing it in the Gulf of Mexico. We always tried to keep the temperature data for Pensacola, St. Pete, Naples, and the Keys on there. Because as the water's warming, you can see the fish moving north. And you can say, okay, it's 78 degrees in Tampa. You know the king mackerel are going to be there. All right, it's 85 degrees in Naples. Well, they've already moved north of there. But in the fall, you watch the temperatures drop coming south, and you can follow the migration of the mahi, the king mackerel, the cobia. You can see them all coming south with the temperatures. In the spring, you can watch them going north. Those temperatures aren't on there just for your amusement. They're on there so you can track the movements of fish. Once you know what water temperature the fish likes, we have the technology. You can just go click and see where it is.
Gives you an idea to prepare for it ahead of time.
Exactly. You can say, okay, it's this temperature up here. They should be here in a week or a month and get ready for it.
Yeah.
The one weird thing that's happened over the last few years that did not happen prior to this is where it's the same temperature from Pensacola to the Keys.
Yeah, that happened a few different times in the last couple of years.
That's how I'm sure things are getting warmer. I'm agreeing with this whole global warming thing. I'm just not agreeing with your psycho crazy attitudes about it all. Sometimes is just is. But where do the fish go when it's the same temperature from the Keys to Pensacola?
Anywhere they want. Yeah, anywhere they want.
Yeah.
Take your pick.
Yeah. Now, temperature is probably the most important thing to a fish because it has to do with digestion. And certain fish can't digest or can only digest within a fairly narrow range of temperatures.
Too cold, it slows down their digestion. The food can literally rot in their stomach.
Right, and for some fish, it's the other way around. Like when you get up north, get into trout and things like that, those fish need really cold water. As soon as the water gets to a certain higher temperature, they stop digesting. So they either don't eat and die, Or you know, they die from whatever they ate, and it rotted in their intestines, and that's the end of them.
It's the reason shrimp is the number one bait all winter long. There's no bones in it. So when a fish eats a shrimp, as that water temperature is very cold, the entire shrimp is much easier to digest in colder waters for most of the fish. So once that water temperature gets to 70 and below, you'll catch more fish with shrimp than you will with anything else. Right. But most of it's because it's easiest to digest. There's no bones, there's no scales. It's much simpler food.
Right, and then you have the two extremes of temperature on either end where a fish can't just physically survive because it's too cold or it's too hot. But for most of the temperature ranges that a fish deals with, it has to do with their digestion. And like Frank is saying, it's also going to depend on what they're going to be willing to eat at that point.
So when the water gets too hot, over 85 degrees, then dead bait becomes the big thing, right, Robert?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dead bait, and it's all about scent and guaranteed food source.
Yeah, too hard to breathe when the water's too hot.
Yeah.
There's no oxygen in it.
Yeah, they don't have to work as hard to get it.
So toss it out there and dead stick it, which means leave the stick alone, pretend it's dead.
Yes.
You, when people buy the bags of crabs that we sell, the blue crabs, the frozen ones, mm-hmm. I tell them, you can cut them up, get a hook into it, but when you toss it into place and don't whip cast it, lob it out very easily, but it's there. Do not touch it for at least 40, 45 minutes.
All right.
Because as soon as you start to reel in, you just reel all the guts out of it.
Yeah.
There's no meat left.
Yeah.
You got one shot to get it where you want it. Get it there close enough. 40, 45 minutes, it must be left alone.
Right. It also gives the fish a time to figure out where it is, you know, to pick up the scent trail. And very few fish are going to run out to a dead bait. They're going to come out slow. They're looking for predators. You know, is it safe to go out there and grab that thing? So, you know, you take it out of its spot right away, and you just ruin the whole possibility of catching a fish.
What I like are blue crabs about the size of my palm. And I can get a hook in one side, and I can leave it whole, and then I can take a pliers or something and beat the shell up on the other side from the hook. Just cracking it. Not really putting holes in it, but just kind of good cracks in it. So now I can throw that out, and the smell is leaching out of the cracks in it. And people say, well, you got to take the shell off for fish to eat it. That's ridiculous.
They're not people.
Yeah, they don't eat the way you do. They gobble the whole thing down because there's even blue crabs, when they get out of their shell, try to eat part of their old shell.
Yeah, absolutely.
They turn around. They've just opened up, got out of this. They got bigger. They're mushy and soft. As they get harder, the most nutritious thing right there is the shell they just got out of.
Yep.
And they'll sit there and eat that.
Vitamin and mineral content. Absolutely. Yeah.
So fish do the same thing. They like eating the shells off of these creatures.
Plus, now, they're designed for it. I mean, look at redfish and black drum. I mean, inside their mouth, they've got a crusher plate, you know, and you can actually find fossilized pieces of those crusher plates out on the beaches and stuff around here. It's that dense of a bone where it'll fossilize, and it's impressive. They just get that crab in there, and they close their mouth down on it and just crush it, and then they can get all the goodies out of it.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
So, okay. Tarpon, first thing in the morning, I'd say K-pays, right, Robert?
Yeah, it's been back and forth from one day to the next, whether on the east side or the K-pay side. It's been varying quite a bit.
There's a lot of people at the Alligator Creek Reef. What fish are there?
Tarpon, mostly, to be honest.
You got a little bit of cobia.
A little bit of cobia.
You got some mangrove snapper and black drum.
Spadefish.
Spadefish.
Yeah, there's been some spadefish there lately.
Gotcha.
Had several reports of spadefish around it.
We've seen a lot of pictures on the internet of people kept picking up spadefish, which is pretty odd.
Oh, yeah. I love catching spadefish.
Yeah.
5.5 foot crappie rod, 2 pound test mono, a little bit of 20 pound leader, crappie jig, tip with a little piece of shrimp, and the fight's on.
People don't realize how phenomenal food they can be, too. I mean, in the Carolinas, they're actually targeted game fish.
Yeah, it's regular game species, part of their, you know, we have the flat slam. Spadefish is actually part of slams in other areas.
Yeah.
Redfish, got a lot of them down by Burnt Store Marina, out on the bar, in front of Bull Bay, Turtle Bay. There's a ton of redfish down there. Is shrimp working on them at all right now?
Really well. Yeah, quite a few people are catching them on shrimp. Especially since in the last several days, the shrimp have gotten bigger, so people are throwing them more, I guess, and being excited about that.
The shrimp just got done molting, because we had a bunch dying in the tank the other day, and that's when the heads and shell all come off. Picture a blue crab. They literally lose their entire outer body, and they're sitting there just a jelly blob, and then that blob stretches out, becomes bigger, they harden up, and off they go again. Now, if they're in a truck while this happens, they die. They can't take the pressure. But even in the tanks, we've seen some of them come out, and you literally touch them, and they're just soft and nothing to them, mushy.
Right.
And then once they harden up, they become really good bait. Now, we're seeing a lot of that going on right now. So the shrimp just got done molting. They're bigger than they were a week ago because this just happened. So you've got bigger shrimp already right now. You got sharks down by Cape Hayes over to Boquilla. In that whole straits area, you're looking for some of your better shark fishing. Trout down by Pine Island and Bull Bay. A lot of good fishing around the harbor right now. Do we still have any red tide on the beach?
There have been still some mild patches of it. It seems to be worse up in Lemon Bay than it is anywhere else right now.
Yeah, a lot of times when you have a large bay with a pass very far north of it and one south of it, you can get trapped red tide in an area like right. that where it can't flush out as quick.
Right.
You would think Lemon Bay, because Stump Pass is so big and so much water goes out of there, that it would actually evacuate that out easier. But really, without a good northeast wind, it's going to be hard to get that red tide out of there.
Yeah, exactly.
It really takes a while.
I think that's the issue they're running into with it.
Yeah, so it's not may not be the red tide is growing and becoming worse there. It could be simply trapped in there. But Fish and Frank here, getting ready to take a little time off. We've got a great guest. Going to be working with Robert for a while. RJ and Robert will be here. I'm going to be taking a hiatus. So here's up my high for my hiatus. Okay? See you, boys. Can That's Robert and Chair across me. RJ up there in command and control.
Can we say that on the radio?
I can have a hiatus.
Oh, okay. Hook, sinker, I